The Quality Shares podcast is sponsored by Sharepad, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders.
Hello and welcome back to the Investability podcast. I am John Hume, joined once again by my co-host Michael Taylor of ShiftingShares.com. How are you doing, Michael?
Pretty good, thanks, John. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. Busy week. So yeah, I've just been sort of keeping an eye on what's been going on in the markets this week. We've got a new email writer on board, Neil Wilson, who I've worked with before. He's putting our daily email together, keeping everyone abreast of what's going on in the broader markets. It's been a funny week this week. I'm sure you've been keeping your eye on the events on the eastern frontier of Europe.
Yeah, well, I can't keep up, but I'm doing my best. Yeah.
I don't think anyone can keep up. And, you know, I watched an amazing documentary a couple of weeks ago called Hyper-Normalization by a guy called Adam Curtis. And it talks a lot about Russia and Russian politics and their modus operandi, the way that they portray themselves on the international stage. And basically, this documentary, which is it's quite a few years old, talks about how their strategy is ultimately to confuse. And I think that this is being played out. Exactly what we're seeing in Ukraine. It's crazy, but it's keeping markets on their toes.
It's not exactly in the art of war, is it, by Sun Tzu, to tell your enemy exactly when you're going to invade. So yeah, everyone's confused. Yeah, you can sort of see it. It's a bit like chess, really, moving around the board, seeing what you can get, stepping back, pressing. Yeah, it's quite interesting.
No, it's a new form of geopolitics, and I'd encourage everyone to watch that documentary, Hyper-Normalization, because it really does give you an idea of what's happening right now. And actually, you know, my view is I don't think there's going to be a war in Ukraine.
I hope not.
Well, I hope not as well. Yeah. Because we've seen what it's done to markets when the threat has been escalated this week. You know, we've had some pretty red days. And then we hear that, you know, the tanks are stepping down and the market's in the green again. It's been chaotic. Things like travel shares have been bouncing around, as you'd imagine.
Yeah, the old travel basket, yeah. Respond to everything these days, yeah.
Well, indeed. So, you know, we've had, you know, periods where, the pandemic's coming to an end. Travel shares rise. Oh, we're going to war with Russia. Travel shares fall. Russia's not going to invade Ukraine, travel shares up again. It is all a bit confusing. We're going to talk about a travel share in particular for our deep dive at the end of this podcast.
Yeah, a reader request, I think, wasn't it?
It was indeed, Hostel World. So we've been spending a little bit of time having a look at that, and we'll get on to that in a minute. Any RNS has caught your eye this week, Michael?
So I traded Money Supermarket this morning, booked a loss on that. Numbers were down. It was quite a big miss. So I think it was around 60 profit after tax forecast, and numbers came in about 51. Revenue was also 2 million off. So I thought that was a good short, opened unchanged. Was fancying my chances, but you know, didn't really do anything and rallied, so closed it for a loss. But I guess the market was already there. I mean, you can't win them all, but I thought that would have been a good trade. But it's also, 16% of their business is comparison, I believe. I would have to double check if I'm exactly right on that, which, you know, with gas prices and it's unattractive to switch, it doesn't really take a genius to work out that they're not doing very well in that side of the business. So it could be that, you know, today people are closing the shorts and I was just too late to the trade.
Yeah, quite possibly. Phil wrote about Money Supermarket back in October. And highlighted some of the problems that they face. Obviously, you've just mentioned energy. That was a big, big threat. And I think people they knew this weakness was coming. I think what we've seen today, home services revenue for the year is down 34%, 68 million for the last quarter of the year. It was down 64% to 8.8 million. So I mean, it's almost been wiped out, that business. Mm-hmm. There's some things going on in the insurance market around the pricing of insurance for existing customers, which is proving slightly problematic for them as well. So these problems were known. And I guess what people are looking out for is, well, what can the company do in response? How does it shift the business into something that actually takes it out of these areas that are in decline and into new areas? It did a deal, bought a company called Quidco, which is a cashback provider, although very small at the moment. It's obviously got a big travel business as well, linking it back to that travel trade we talked about, which has obviously been, you know, like all travel businesses, all but wiped out by the pandemic. So you know, I think if I remember rightly, it's talked about search trends indicating that the travel recovery could be coming, and that it's seen a decent performance from that travel business in January. So I guess that's what people are looking out for now.
Yeah, I think it's also a 6% yielder as well. So probably people are looking at the cash flows, running the ruler over it. Not for me, but I guess there's some for everyone in the market.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually quite a good business, and it's one of these sort of platform businesses, you know, we like. So things like Rightmove, Auto Trader, you know, which always seem very capable of making money regardless of the market conditions behind, you know, their particular industries that they service. You know, very, very good quality, very high margins, very high, you know, returns on capital. Money Supermarket was one of those businesses. You know, we've seen its weakness in the last year. But yeah, I guess, you know, if it bounces back, these are the kind of nice, say, very, very profitable businesses that we're on the lookout for. Too much uncertainty as to how they shift the business here for me.
It would only ever be a trading chip for me. It's not something I would look at too much in depth.
I mean, you say you shorted that one. Talking of shorting,
yeah,
there's some interesting news out from the US, which we mentioned in our morning email, which relates to short sellers being probed by the US Justice Department. So we're talking people like Muddy Waters and Citron Research. What do you make of this? Are they the bad guys? Is the Justice Department going after the wrong people here?
Yeah, it's funny. Everyone thinks of short as the bad guys, and sometimes I'll short a popular stock on Twitter, and I just won't announce it because it's not worth, you know, the targets and, you know, personal attacks that you get for doing it. But also, if you think about shorting, you can only actually make 100% of your money. That is the max. So I actually much prefer going long. But the thing is with shorts is you've really got to do your research, because you can just be carried out completely, especially if you're a professional trader. You don't have the ESMA protection, the negative balance protection. You absolutely have to do your research. And I think that these guys are the people that discover frauds. Yeah, and you mentioned in the morning email about Bill Ackman, where he says no regulator has ever found a fraud. You know, he's absolutely right. Has the FCA ever found a fraud? Did Wirecard, was the German regulator, did they find that? Or was it short sellers? You know, so there is a big drive for short sellers to actually find and be rewarded for these things. And obviously, if they're wrong, it can go terribly wrong, as Bill Ackman actually found. So he shorted Herbalife because he said it was a Ponzi scheme because it sold more product down through the network to people who then sold that product down to other people. So it was more selling and recruiting new people to sell product, and the product just get pushed down the pipe, rather than sold to actually customers.
Yeah.
And you know, you can see the argument there, but he actually lost money on that trade, probably because he had a personal dispute going with Bill Icahn, who decided to just buy the stock to spite Bill Ackman. But yeah, you really do have to do your research. I don't think these people are the bad guys.
No, and so they do produce, you know, hugely detailed reports on the companies that they're shorting. Extensive investigation that you know, you really don't get from analysts, you know, on the sell side necessarily. I was first alerted to Carson Block of Muddy Waters through the China Hustle documentary on Netflix. I assume you've seen that.
Yeah, and I think that's a must watch for anyone in financial markets, because it's just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. I mean, you know, what struck me was that, you know, the lengths to which they had to go to find the information out about these companies out in China. It's like breaking the law, you know, just by watching them in many cases. And then, of course, you know, a lot of these companies were listing in America through brokers who had essentially been captured by these fraudulent companies. You know, there was a whole industry around promoting Chinese frauds.
Well, I mean, it still goes on now. I mean, there's a company listed in the UK that I'm 99% sure is a fraud. Obviously, not going to name it because I don't need to be sued. I don't need to get personal attacks or bombs through my letterbox. But I mean, that is the case. It's, you know, it still goes on today.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So you can argue that, you know, these guys are producing research which then moves the share price, and they're taking a position before their research is published. And then the research is published and you know, 9 times out of 10, the share price falls. I guess this is what the objection of the US authorities is, that they're manipulating the prices down through their research. But I kind of, it's sort of a bit chicken and egg there, and I can't really, I mean, it's a difficult one.
Yeah, it is tough. I mean, if you think, when we did the IC podcast about Burford Capital, I was saying that it was a short, and then the stock had actually started falling quite heavily before Muddy Waters had even announced the position. And of course, when they announced it, it absolutely cratered. And I think they were saying it was nearly bankrupt, or, you know, they were very sort of vague, didn't say exactly what it was, but they were then covering a couple of days later, but also the share price had fallen so much, so it makes sense. But did they actively cause that drop by publishing research? Well, yes, but does it matter? I mean, what's the difference between me buying a load of stock now and then coming on this podcast and say, oh, I've bought this stock because this, this, and this? How is that any different? It's not really, because you're not going to give your best ideas away before you've taken a position. I mean, unless you work for charity or something. But, you know, I would always rather take a position and then declare it afterwards. I think it's a difficult one, to say the least.
Yeah, it does seem like a case of going after the wrong guys here. And, you know, we know that there's a very strange stuff that goes on over in the US, you know, particularly among, you know, members of its government, buying and selling shares. I mean, you know, there's probably something to investigate there before you go after people like Muddy Waters, who, you know, I think they're doing a really good job. I mean, you know, the whole short selling phenomenon for me began when Gotham went after Quindell, and they were right. So, you know, it's price discovery. It's, you know, this is what you need in markets, and it's very hard, you know, to do that level of research, you know, on your own. So without reward. So I'm all for it.
And also, if shorters do move a price downwards, that's an opportunity for investors to actually buy cheaper stock. And yeah, there is the other side of it. So let's say you own a broker and you decide to go short on a stock, and then you say to your company, who's a client of you that you've taken the short position in, we'll raise you a couple of million in cash. And they barely phone out to any clients because they just cover the short position themselves. You could argue that is value destruction, but it's not illegal, I don't think. So if it's not illegal, it probably happens. And if it is illegal, it probably happens anyway, because these things do happen.
They do. And I think back to my days as an analyst and some of the things that I saw. The city is an unsavory place at times. But what can you do except, you know, encourage the regulators to actually take more of an interest in some of this stuff in a positive way, and actually support short selling activity where it's being used to protect investors from fraudulent companies. And we know that they exist because we've seen lots and lots of them. I mean, I'm not saying it's a fraudulent company, but another company that was a subject of a short selling attack was Boohoo. I think it was Shadowfall that put a research note out on there.
Yeah.
It didn't go too well for it at the time, but it's looking better in hindsight. You heard something about Boohoo this week, which we've discussed now on every podcast we've done, I think.
Yeah. So yesterday there was a note to Betaville subscribers about a potential offer coming. And that did move the price about 10%. It's come off today. So, you know, clearly the market doesn't really believe it. But I mean, that could also just be someone tipping it to get the price moving to then dump. So you never know if these things are that credible. Even in the weekend press, they'll report whatever gets some clicks. It, you know, they might not do the research. Who knows if it's true?
Yeah, I struggle to see the attraction myself after, you know, after the problematic few years that this company has had. For reasons that we discussed recently on our podcast, Fashion Victims. Not convinced by that. Where that rumor has come from, I don't know. But if I was a regulator, I'd be more interested in that sort of thing. Dubious, anyway. Dubious, to say the least.
Sharepad is an all-in-one platform for private investors and traders, providing in-depth data on everything from shares, funds, ETFs, and more across the UK, US, and Europe. With your subscription, you get live updates from UK Alliance News and RNS, and access to powerful stock screening and portfolio management tools. Visit shareScope.co.uk to find out more about Sharepad, and if you haven't subscribed before, you can get your second month free by using the Investability promotional code, which is the word invest.
Okay, should we move on to Deep Dive and Hostel World, which is an interesting company. As I said we did Somero last time, and you know, we looked at the numbers and valuation. It all looked really quite nice. I'm not sure we're going to end up concluding the same thing about Hostel World.
No, I don't think so. It's if you look at the chart, it's come off quite a lot. For some reason, it's up this week by a decent amount, but there hasn't been any news or anything that I'm aware of. Someone likes them. That's for sure.
Was there much volume accompanying that move?
Not that I can see. No,
market makers up to their old tricks. So it's as you would could probably guess from its name, Hostel World is involved in. It's essentially a travel agent for the hostel market. So a platform like perhaps Airbnb or Booking.com or Expedia or whatever you want to use for booking your holidays. This one, Hostel World, is very specifically targeting the hostel industry, which is not something, I must admit, I have an enormous amount of experience with. Have you travelled hosteling across Europe or whatever it is?
Yes, I used to be a regular customer of Hostel World. My first experience was £6 a night place in Prague, which I know you don't expect much for £6, but this was it looked like prison. It was genuinely terrible. But yeah, I've had some good experiences with Hostel World, but I think as you get older, you move up to Booking.com, which actually now has very cheap accommodation as well. So it's almost like a competitor.
Okay, so you've got the more established sort of normal travel agency businesses that are moving down into Hostel World's market potentially.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, so Hostel World's generally targeting the people who are conscious of the cost, but also I think Booking are doing that as well. But also they've got the 5-star luxury hotels. Yeah, so I can't really see how Hostel World will grow.
No, and actually that's something we saw looking at its revenue history, its financials. If you look back to 2015 to 2019 before the pandemic, its top line hasn't really grown at all, which would really support your insight there that growth is the real problem for this company.
Yeah, I mean it's a travel stock, so you know if everyone starts going out again, maybe they'll see a one-off increase in the numbers, who knows? But I think it's going to be quite difficult. With this, I would always just look at the chart, and the chart sort of tells the story. It's well off its highs. I'd probably like to see it break out of 120 if I was going to trade it long. But at this moment, I don't have any edge. I don't really have any insight. It doesn't look like an amazing business.
It's got a long way to go before it gets back to 120. But actually, if you look at that chart, just while we're on the subject of the chart, you know, it's really decline started in 2018. So peaked in 2018, and it's pretty much been a downward journey ever since. So forget the pandemic. You know, this was a business whose share price was in decline before COVID was even a twinkling in the Wuhan Institute of Virology's eye. So you've got a problematic business here anyway. Now I think there's some other problems that I saw. So one, obviously, the pandemic has been enormously disruptive for it. So I think, you know, even though there's been a bit of recovery this year, latest trading update, which I think was 12th of January, bookings are about a fifth of 2019 levels, which would obviously be the last pre-pandemic comparable period. it's running out of cash, or it was running out of cash. And this is something that troubled me. So like many businesses in the travel sector, business was wiped out. You know, it had a very fairly large employee base. You know, spent a lot of money on marketing, technology. Really had to, first of all, trim its sales to kind of get costs down, get that cash burn down. But it also, like many companies, raised cash at the beginning of the pandemic. So June 2020, it raised 14.5 million euros. And this year, or sorry, last year, it's had to then issue a term loan. So another 30 million euros raised through a five-year term loan. So that would suggest to me that it didn't raise enough money when it last raised, that it's now had to go back and find other forms of financing.
Yeah, quite a lot of businesses do that. They'll underestimate how much they actually need. Let's say a company raises money and you think it's going to need money again within the year, you're not really going to rush into the stock, are you? Because you just think, well, I'll wait for the next raise and take part in that. I'll wait till that's over. So do you think that they will need money again with equity?
I don't know. So I'm looking at this funding chart. And I think they're still burning around 8 million euros every 6 months. So they've now got 25 million euros left in the bank. And some of that is part of this term loan that they took on. As I say, that's 8 million less than it was at the half year. So you know, that isn't going to last. You know, they're going to need trading to bounce back really strongly to arrest the rate of cash that's flowing out of the business. But business is coming back very, very slowly indeed. Yes, I think it's quite possible that they are going to need more funds at some point. And that will worry me. When they raised money in 2020, they issued basically 20% of the company to raise 14.5 million euros. So you know, the risk of dilution here, I think is quite significant. The holders of the issuer of the term note also has a right over 3 million shares through warrants. I don't think the financing position looks particularly strong here. Which I think is problematic. So what you really want to see then is, okay, so how is the business recovering in terms of trading? And this is where, you know, I think the jury's out as well. And it kind of relates back to all the things we've talked about previously about the trajectory of the pandemic, the trajectory of geopolitical events. You know, I'm not sure, you know, I think there is going to be a travel recovery, but it is tentative. Holidaymakers are proving tentative at the moment.
Yeah, there's going to be some winners, and you know, not entirely sure Hostelworld will be a winner, because like anything, it's part of the network effect. So hostels are typically smaller operators. I mean, I know of several that have just gone completely, closed and shut up shop. With so many people not going on to Hostelworld, are they going somewhere else? Or yeah, I mean, Rightmove is so fantastically profitable because it has lots of listings, which attract lots of people, which then attracts lots of listings. So is that the case with Hostelworld? I feel like you probably need to research that, website visits, things like that. Look at how much traction the site is gaining.
The numbers don't look terrible in terms of like the numbers of transactions that it processes, its engagement on social media platforms, that sort of thing. What I kind of struggle with is sort of it's the quality metrics here. So I looked at, if you actually, you know, do a really sort of back of the fag packet calculation, it's making about 10 quid for every booking. And that seems pretty thin to me.
That's a thin margin.
Yeah. So you know, you if you think about it, you know, hostels are cheap. It's basically taking a small cut of a cheap product. Whereas, you know, perhaps look at some of the other travel companies. Yeah, they're taking a small cut, but the overall value of each sale would be significantly higher. Mm. They're also, I think, suffering some problems in terms of the kind of the nature of the market and the way it's operating. So they're talking about bed price deflation. Higher cancellation rates, reduction in blended commission rates. You know, we've got things here that will just make it harder to sort of run to standstill. So slightly troubling there. And I think this sort of stuff shows up in, if you look at things like, you know, historic operating margins, historic returns on capital, they're pretty thin, like you said. So just a quick look, return on capital has never gone higher than 10%. That was back in 2016. Free cash flow sort of bounced around a bit, but in its last full year before the pandemic was fairly low, at around 7 million. Operating margins sort of hover around 10%, something like that. And I guess, you know, what you would be hoping if you're a Hostelworld investor is that they are the equivalent of those platform businesses we talked about earlier, like a Rightmove or an Auto Trader or even a Money Supermarket. I don't think it is. You know, those numbers don't suggest that it has the same role in its industry as a Rightmove or an Auto Trader.
There's also Airbnb as well, which we haven't mentioned, which is also probably eating into Hostelworld's share.
Yeah, they've had some good numbers this week, actually. They actually beat their expectations. I think shares were up about, where were they? Up about 8% over the week. But yeah, it's down on its last quarter, but actually, you know, it expects to be ahead of 2019 levels by the end of this quarter. So you know, we're talking about a business that seems to have bounced back a lot more quickly than what the expectation is at Hostelworld.
Yeah. So what did you say Hostelworld was? A fifth of 2019's?
A fifth of 2019's, yeah.
Yeah, so one business there has done very well and one definitely hasn't.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a word that I keep hearing now, bifurcation. You know, you can see the industry quality heading off in two directions. But, you know, something's wrong at Hostelworld. I kind of think that, you know, it's a finite market. You know, it's appealing very much to a certain demographic. You know, it's the millennial traveller, basically, whereas Airbnb caters to everybody.
And you can get some very cheap Airbnbs as well.
Well, absolutely. You only take one look at the, and I would encourage you to do this, look at the last interim results presentation, and I can see immediately this is not for me. This is not an experience for me, the hosteling experience. So, yeah, I'm just not convinced by this, not convinced by the market, not convinced by the company and its ability to execute, not convinced by the financing position, or that it even really displayed any kind of strength in the years running up to the pandemic. So
I think it's a no from me, which means it'll be up 50% within the week. So,
yeah, it's a thumbs down from me as well. You know, it was a bit tougher actually, because, you know, on the face of it, it's a nice idea. On the plus side, you know, it is sort of the leader in its niche, has spent a lot of money on its platform. But then, you know, I guess that's sort of a hygiene factor. That's about it for the ballpoints. But I think as you drill into it, you just see that, you know, this is, as I say, a business really that has historically struggled to grow. And now, it faces a very, very challenging recovery.
Yeah, I mean, there's 2,000 stocks listed on the London Stock Exchange. I mean, can you not find a better one than this? I can't see any reason to hold it.
Yeah, me neither. As we said before, if you've got any ideas for future deep dives, do let us know. We've had a couple come in already. I think someone asked if we could have a look at the miners and mentioned Rio Tinto, a bit on the large side, but, you know, we can have a go. Anyone suggest anything to you, Michael?
Nick has suggested we look at Argentex, which seems like an interesting business. So we'll do some research on that this week.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I think it's good to keep it small. There's a lot of information out there about large companies. Hostelworld, I could barely find any broker research about it.
But sometimes that's a positive. Positive as in everyone hates the stocks and nobody covers it. So if you actually find something that's good, you can get in there quite quick and be at the start of a move. If you can't find any research, that means it can be inefficient. And then if you find something worth buying, you've got a nice price. But yeah, it's not. Sometimes everyone hates a stock for a reason. So you've just got to work out if it is rightly hated.
Yeah. Well, I think the lack of research suggests something about Hostelworld. That's That's for sure. I'm probably going to upset a few people with this one. But we've got to say what we see. We've got to say what we see.
That's the whole point.
And I don't have a position, long or short. So
me neither.
So no one can come after me for manipulating the price. thanks, Michael. Been great talking to you as usual.
Thanks, John.
And thank you all for listening. Thanks for all for your feedback as well on our new format. I'm glad you like it. We'll be back again next week. Thank you.